skill from Lionel Messi, surging forward with real menace here. Brilliant from Messi. Oh, what a goal that is! And the whole of this ground stands and applauds.
Lewandowski goes through again. Oh, he just can't do it! You just cannot be that good! That is an amazing goal! The fastest hat-trick in the history of the Bundesliga. Clobbered that one right into the corner of the net to make it 5-1.
Sandro, he's going to get there, he cuts it in, Higuain at the chest, Mandzukic off the chest, and your goal! Mario Mandzukic, as good as you will ever see in a European Cup final, has tied the game!
You're listening to Bail Me Out, the European football podcast on URN. A new intro there to kick off a new season here on Bail Me Out. Yes, welcome to this, the European Football Podcast on URN. I'm your host, Jeremy Dunn, and I'm joined here in the studio by David Saunders and Joe Tanner. So we've got a big show to start things off. We're going to be doing our standard review of what's been happening across the European leagues. And coming up shortly, you can also stay tuned to listen in to what will be our transfer segment review, where we discuss all the latest goings on in the transfer window from the season just gone. Has it been the maddest on record? I think everyone will certainly say it's up there. And also then later on in the year, we'll be having our full discussions of how things have been going in the Champions League. But to kick things off, we're going to be looking at the European leagues that we always do. And starting off with what is always, I always say, it's my favourite league to start things off for competitions, and it's got to be the Serie A. So, it's been an interesting start to the season with 6 games played, and the table's looking, I suppose, somewhat familiar, but also somewhat different. We've got up there at the top 2 teams of Napoli and Juventus. Both teams are unbeaten with 6 wins out of 6. However, Napoli are sitting on top of the pile at the moment thanks to their incredible goal-scoring form of 22 goals in the last 6 games. They've been firing high and powerful, but Juve aren't far behind on only 18 goals, which they've scored, and they've conceded fewer with 3 goals to 5. Juve, of course, have been powered up there by the goal-scoring machine at the moment that is Paulo Dybala in the form of his life, with 10 goals coming the last 6 games for him. The boy is on fire. Is he the heir to Lionel Messi? Well, that'll be something discussed long and hard, especially as we move later on as we discuss this throughout the rest of the season. But guys, let's sort of have a look at it. The top 3 as they stand in Serie A, like I said, Napoli, Juventus, and below them are Inter Milan, who they themselves have had a pretty strong start. 5 wins, 1 defeat. They'd be calling that decent if they weren't in a league with probably Juventus and a free-scoring Napoli.
Yeah, no, it's been a very good start in Serie A. Quite an interesting one of you, as you touched on, in terms of the order of the teams at the start of this season. Of course, only 6 games played, but nonetheless, a very interesting look at things with Napoli on top. I mean, the stats speak for themselves. 22 goals in 6 matches so far. They've clearly got the attack to cater for that. The likes of Hamsik, Insigne, Mertens, who have really been pulling the strings for them. Of course, Juventus, as we know, will be there or thereabouts come the end of the season. Everyone's hotshot favourites for Serie A. But yeah, no, I think it's very good in terms of competition that you've got a top 3 or 4 there that you wouldn't have necessarily put as your top 3 or 4 come the start of the season.
Yeah, definitely the top 6, I think, of Napoli, Juve, Inter, Lazio, Roma and AC are probably the top 6 that most would have predicted. Maybe not, given the form of those Milan clubs over recent years, sometimes not being able to perform as well. Given that AC have spent, what would it be, the second most amount of money of anyone in the transfer window? Oh no, probably Man City spent more.
They've spent the most in Italy, I think it's safe to say. I mean, we'll probably come on to talk about them in a bit more detail, actually, when we really look into that as sort of has it been the start they wanted? But yeah, I mean, just sort of looking at that then, David, do you think then that Inter, when we talk about them, they've had such a weird revolving door policy on managers over the last years. It's sort of, you know, what we would view as a bad club, and yet here they are, sat in third place, doing really well for themselves with everyone's least favourite captain, I think it's safe to say, Mario Icardi, actually in really good form again.
I don't think it's fair to say that just because they keep losing managers, it's a bad club. Oh, you thought I was going to defend Mario Icardi, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are worse captains in world football. But looking at it, really, you're sat again, 5 wins and a draw. conceding only two goals as well, conceded the fewest of anyone in the league. That's not at all unimpressive. Again, you know, all the caveats of, well, it's six games in, you can only play who's put in front of you, you've probably not played anyone decent yet. You know, you've got all those arguments which are fair, but I don't think it's fair to say that just because they've got a little bit of a revolving door, they're a bad team. It's the same as, you know, the Barcelona or the Madrid problem, that regardless of how many managers you have, regardless of which manager you have, probably going to do quite well at a club like Inter Milan. And that hasn't been true in recent years, of course, but it should be.
Yeah, I mean, Inter have conceded the fewest goals out of anyone in that whole division, I believe. So, very, very good start at the back from their point of view. You know, Nagamoto in particular has done very well at the start of this season. As you mentioned, Icardi there, but you've got players like Perisic and Kondrava as well. Kondrava's been at the club for quite a while now as well, so he'll be able to kind of cater for, you know, some of these new players that have come in and help them settle, because that's the big thing, isn't it? You look at Inter and you look at AC and you pick those two out as the kind of the real big spenders, if you like, of Serie A during the summer transfer window, in comparison to the likes of Juve and Napoli, who've had more settled squads. And it really is a case of, you know, managers and owners wanting that instant success, as it is, yeah, across all of world football. But, you know, they do need time to integrate and you know, become a team.
Yeah, I mean, the man they have obviously got in is Spalletti, who did fantastic work at Roma last year. I remember, Joe, you and I were really big fans of the way he'd set up his team and how they were playing really attractively. And his departure has seen Roma, although Roma have a game in hand, they are currently in fifth, which is okay, but, you know, people did think Roma might struggle a bit more this season. The squad's obviously, it's the post-Totti era now. You know, they've suffered a couple of losses here and there. Lazio obviously still doing very well. They thumped AC Milan, which brings me nicely onto AC Milan. They thumped them 4-0 when they played them earlier on in the season. Now, AC, like we said, it was great to see the Rossoneri flexing their financial muscle at long last. The Chinese investors promised investment and they gave it. The club started to buy great players. Pick of the bunch, I think we can probably agree, has to be Bonucci from arch-rivals Juventus. In my opinion, one of the top two best defenders in the world, if not the best ball-playing centre-back in the world. Fantastic acquisition. And yet, it's possibly a case of what might have happened, we could say, with Manchester City when they were taken over by Sheikh Mansour originally. They bought in quite a lot of players, but it was a bit, you didn't quite know how they're going to gel together. And the squad looks a little bit uncertain, a bit uneven at the moment. I mean, what do we think is going to be the outcome for this team at the end of the season? Has the sort of like the gloss of the restoration of the of AC maybe been tarnished by this awkward start for them?
No, I don't think it's been a massively awkward start. As we say, they're in sixth. They picked up, you know, four wins out of their opening six. It's not good enough. You know, they lost this weekend to Sampdoria, who are okay one place below them. So it's not an unimpressive start. It may not be good enough. They may not be up there with the top three, but they're not. They're 4 points off Inter after six games. It's not a mountain to climb. Again, they have also played a couple of hard games. I would imagine that they'll be top five come the end of the season. But quite frankly, it's too early. But anyone saying that they think they can predict that top five, and the order of that top five in particular, clearly has never watched football. I mean, in particular, Italian football. Because we are talking some impressive seasons of two halves sometimes. And if AC can keep up, you know, what are they on currently? Two-thirds, picking up points, picking up full points in, you know, that kind of ratio of games, easily making top five. Can they make top three, as their manager suggested was good enough? Of course, remembering that Serie A only has three Champions League places.
That is being changed, however, for next season. Really, yes. Unfortunately for them, they are getting a fourth spot, which is about time, in my opinion, but, you know.
Well, no, it's not really about time, because it's, I mean, this might not be, this might not be connected to Serie A per se, but the top four leagues are getting four automatic spots in the Champions League group stage. That's really generous. That's 16 of 32 group stage teams automatically being decided by simply finishing in the top four in four leagues. I think, really, I don't know why we moved away from the system where England used to have two teams to go into the qualifying rounds. I think it's just completely ridiculously unfair to smaller leagues in Europe.
Ooh, we can save that debate for another time.
That's another one.
Of course, AC Milan have got the Europa League to compete for this season. Up next, they've got Rijeka, I think, in that Minnows from Croatia. But they should definitely be looking for a solid campaign in the Europa League, as well as a good campaign in Serie A, to really kind of make a statement that this squad that they've been building, and, you know, not just Bonucci at the back, which definitely strengthens things and, you know, provides a wall for Donnarumma, who last season did fantastically well. As there was only, I think, 18, is it? 19? Doing fantastically well. Obviously, everyone's comparing him to Buffon and what have you. Might be a bit early for that, but he wasn't really helped by a pretty shoddy defence, I think it's fair to say, last season, which was responsible for their final league position. But, you know, up front, you've got Suso as well, who they've signed, which, you know, will, you know, really bolster their attack, as well as Kalinic as well. So they've strengthened in various areas, and I think, you know, they've got every right to be competing for the top three spots in that league, to be honest. And I think sixth at the moment, probably, you know, a fair reflection, but could be, I think they'll be looking upwards as opposed to downwards in Serie A, certainly this season.
But definitely true that, yes, they've strengthened, yes, they've got a decent looking first 11 for now, but that game at the weekend, which they lost 2-0 to Sampdoria, again, okay, Sampdoria is seventh, got a game in hand on Milan and are only a point behind them. But who did they bring off the bench? They brought off Hakan Çalhanoğlu, which I didn't know he went to AC, and Fabio Borini.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest surprise move for all of AC's dealings.
Yeah, Fabio Borini.
That's saying something.
Always a very underrated player, though, I found. And, you know, he's in his homeland of Italy, so...
Let's ask the Liverpool fan.
I think we will leave that discussion there before we get into Fabio Borini. But, yes, I mean, AC, let's hope that, for the sake, I think, of all the romantics in football, that we get to see them back in the big time soon. I mean, it's promising to see this investment.
Well, the easiest way to guarantee that, of course, is to win the Europa League.
Mm. Yeah, if that, exactly.
Finishing in that top three this season in Italy is going to be an incredibly difficult task. Mm. You would probably say Juve and Inter are guaranteed it, although some would say that Inter aren't. Mm. Napoli are probably as well, but... I don't want to say they're the weakest of
burnout
those three teams.
Could be an issue for Napoli, because Napoli are very dependent on their forward line. That is an issue which which we might sort of potentially see later on in the season. But who knows? AC might take the route of the Man Uniteds and potentially the Arsenals.
If you had to look at it this season, you would say that's the safest thing for AC Milan to do. They've got an annoyingly easy Europa League group. Not that there isn't really such a thing. You mentioned they're playing Rijeka as the recording goes in match week 2 of the Europa League, although Rijeka did hold Olympiacos to a decent game back in that, was that, yeah, must have been Champions League qualifier. So it's not as if any game in the Europa is going to be easy, but you would expect AC Milan, joint favourites according to the English bookmakers for that tournament, to easily progress through that. And then in January, like the other favourites for that tournament, they have to look at their league position and go, do we think we can make the Champions League of our own merit, or do we think that it would be safer to potentially prioritise that route, which is guaranteed Champions League football, for winning it, which of course isn't guaranteed, but it's probably easier than getting in the top three in Italy.
Yeah, well, there we are. I mean, we'll probably have to leave our Serie A discussion there, unfortunately, because we have got a big show, packed show, and we need to be rattling through on that. And we could all, by the sounds of it, talk for about the AC Milan situation and indeed the Serie A situation for days. But let's move on then to the next league, which we've got on our list, which is La Liga. And obviously, La Liga, we're going to have to say, is obviously dominated by the big three, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Atletico Madrid. And of the stories that were going on this summer, one club obviously dominated it above all else, and that was Barcelona, with the whole situation going on with Neymar. If you want to hear our full thoughts on the Neymar deal and also the Dembele deal that followed and how this is going to affect the whole thing, then tune into our podcast that will be coming out shortly, which is where we sit down and discuss this summer's transfer window. But we're going to ignore that for the moment and look at how the situation sits in the league. And maybe getting rid of Neymar might be viewed by Barcelona fans at the moment as not a big deal. They're currently sitting on top of La Liga with 6 wins from 6. Goals they've got are 20, only conceding 2. Fantastic start for them. Meanwhile, Real Madrid have had a stinker of a start. They are down in 6th with only 3 wins, 2 draws and 1 loss. Of course, that is without their talisman Cristiano Ronaldo, who has only just started to return back to the squad. But with the depth of talent they have, 6th place for that team is appalling. And perhaps Zinedine Zidane, who has always said he has been aware that he's had to keep looking over his shoulder for when the dreaded Florentino Perez axe might come down his career, perhaps this is going to be the time. But of course, looking at the other top top four teams, we have Atletico Madrid sitting in second, solid Simeone team as ever. Sevilla proving that without their previous manager Samponi, they can still fight with the big guns up in third. And Valencia, of course, returning back to the top four. A really badly run club, a lot of people would say, but they are starting to potentially get out of a horrendous patch they've had, and they are back up in fourth at the moment with three wins and three draws. Guys, looking around at this, the top half of La Liga, where we've got the big teams knocking around, which one of the two do you think immediately draws your eye? The fact that Barcelona are doing so well, or the fact that Real Madrid seem to have fallen to pieces?
Combination of the two, I think. Definitely Real Madrid. It's almost baffling how they're in sixth position. I mean, they've scored almost half of the goals that Barcelona had at the start of this season. Six conceded. I mean, that's not a vast amount, but you know, with the defense they have and the attacking talent, of course, you know, even without Cristiano Ronaldo, they've still got, you know, a midfield of like Kroos, Bale, Asensio,
Isco, you know, Modric.
Exactly,
it's insane.
It's you know, the plethora of attacking and defensive talent that they have in that squad. They should not be in sixth position at all. They should be, you know, first and second, as they always have been in the La Liga title race, you know, almost since its inception, to be quite honest with you. It's only been Atletico that's really, you know, eaten into that in recent seasons. But yeah, it's just shocking, really. Zinedine Zidane, after such a successful year last year and in previous years, of course, with that back-to-back Champions League victories, as well as, you know, La Liga title as well. It's baffling. Yeah.
It's partly that, but it also, you know, if you look at Real Madrid's fixtures, they've only played two teams outside of the bottom, outside of the top, nine as it stands, really. They played Betis. They lost to Betis at the weekend, who, you know, lost midweek, who were just above them. They played Sociedad, who were in eighth. They played Levante, who were in ninth. They played Valencia, who were in fourth. They have played teams around and above them. It's not so much that they're not doing well. It's that these are games, those results, with the exception of maybe losing to Betis, those are results that at any other time in the season, if they were, you know, up there with Barcelona, you'd go, okay, that's a blip, that could happen. That it's all bunched up together, that these teams that they are playing, maybe they didn't expect, you know, Sociedad, Betis and Valencia to be as high as they are. But that's still no reason to think that Madrid are having a wobbly, as it were. I think that, yes, it hasn't been good enough for them, and certainly I imagine Real Madrid fan TV is a terrible thing to watch right now. No, that sounds good now I think about it.
Of course, Zidane will have one eye on the Champions League as well. Yeah. Massive, yeah. Massive game against Dortmund tonight for some sort of redemption after these disappointing results by Madrid standards at the start of this season. Tottenham in 2 weeks' time, but in between they've got two absolute must wins against Espanyol and Getafe as well. So, you know, they'll be looking for, you know, for any improvement in form and improvement performances at all areas of the field, really.
Yeah, it is a testing time, I think, then for Real Madrid. And one club, though, that might be about to go into a testing time could be their arch rivals in Barcelona. The team that have been propelled, it has to be said, at the start of the season by Lionel Messi's return to his majestic best, where he is just unplayable. And even if you're a Ronaldo fan or you think that Messi might be overrated, sometimes when you watch those highlights, like again him against Juventus in the Champions League, you can't argue that he is just at times completely unplayable. But obviously now Ousmane Dembele has been injured, which could potentially affect them. But they are on a very strong start. But one team which I'm going to mention are on the other side of Madrid, and they are Real Madrid's other arch rivals. Real Madrid do have a lot of arch rivals, it seems, which is Atletico Madrid. Now, Atletico, of course, recently has been announced. They've got Diego Costa. They brought him in. Lots of Chelsea fans obviously very annoyed about that, about how the whole thing ended up. With Costa arriving in January, they ended their transfer ban, and the return of Vitolo, who I believe is at Las Palmas at the moment as well, joined them from Sevilla. Obviously, they will be paying the fee in advance. Could we see, maybe, if Simeone can keep his team fighting in the top two, a late title charge from them? Antoine Griezmann linking up with Diego Costa is a frightening prospect.
Well, we've got really the acid test of that coming up. Barcelona's next two fixtures are Las Palmas at home. Okay, Las Palmas, you know, two wins, four defeats. That's probably going to be a bit of a walkover, although strange things have happened at sea. And then after the international break, their first game back is away to Atletico Madrid. 14th of October. That, when Atletico should have their players back, they should have a couple of the new lot. I don't know when Costa's actually going to sign for them. I think it's January.
January.
I lost track of that transfer, really, because it went on
for being reported ages
in really bizarre ways. So to see that coming up, two fixtures from now, is going to be, to me, an indication. If Atletico Madrid can play well, regardless of the result, you can't always rely on getting a result sometimes. But as long as the performance from Atletico is that of a team that you would expect up there, which of course you would, because they're Atletico, they should at least be third in most seasons. I would honestly look at... If I were a betting person, I think I would put money on Atletico for that. At home...
The new home stadium, of course.
Venue, the Wanda Metropolitano or whatever.
Yeah.
Whoever it's sponsored by now.
It does look a fantastic stadium, it has to be said. And that could be really interesting for how things are going to progress with them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Costa's in January will make a very needed addition to the squad, I feel, because I don't think personally that the link-up play between Griezmann and Torres is quite hitting the heights that it should between Griezmann and a striker. I think Costa will definitely provide that. Of course, you know, one of their prodigal sons like Aguero and others in the past, you know, coming back to
Felipe Luis as well, on the exact same route.
Yeah. Gone exactly the same route. I mean, Felipe Luis, I think, you know, he's never really given that much of a chance at Chelsea, with Marco Alonso, of course, being so prolific. And I think it's really good in terms of their defensive line, which has always been very, very strong for Simeone. I think his policy of a rigid 4-4-2, sometimes going to a 4-5-1, has worked wonders in the Champions League and in La Liga as well. I think him and Godin at the back, obviously Godin has been a stalwart there for so many years. They'll have both kind of defence and attack in a very, very good place come January. And I think, you know, that will be just at the right time for them to mount a sort of title charge. Because if you look at some of the results, just an indication as to sort of how much they need Costa, despite a 5-1 win against Las Palmas, they've only been winning their matches by sort of two goals to one goal margins.
What did you say, 5-1?
5-1,
so
yeah.
So that means that in the five games before that, they'd scored 7 goals. Three wins and 2 draws.
Exactly, plus 2 draws, yeah.
Sorry, Joe, I was just cutting there. Just as we had, I think their last game was a 2-0 win against Sevilla, with Yannick Ferrer-Carrasco getting his first goal of the season. So maybe he might now kick on a bit. Griezmann obviously came up trumps and got one for them. But it's those kind of games that you sort of associate with the Simeone side. Tight defence, lock them down, hopefully hit the odd goal on the counter-attack. But you never know, like if they just keep getting those results over the season, that the points rack up and if the results go their way, it could be another title for him.
They'll be disappointed as well with that 0-0 draw against Roma as well in the Champions League, which given their form in the last two or three seasons, of course, reaching the final, they'll want to rectify that.
And they've got Chelsea on match week 2 in the Champions League. Again, an excellent example to show what they're made of. And again, at least at this stage of the season, results aren't the most important thing, the performances are, because if you're playing well and just not getting the results, it will turn around. That you can't play well though without winning in the later stage of the season, but here you can. From what I've managed to catch of Atletico, I don't think they're going to win the league though. As you say, they're not quite scoring enough in most games. Maybe Costa will change that. Maybe they'll start to hit that form. Mm. And if he adds, you know, from January, if he adds 15 goals... Yeah.
It's just a case of him staying fit in the meantime, isn't it? But you'd hope that would bring a massive bolster to Simeone and his team come the new year.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see when that actually rolls around. Also, maybe how they'll do in the Champions League. They could be some people... I mean, I think some people already have them as dark horse favourites for the Champions League. Be interesting.
It's a terrible group, though, isn't they?
It's a very tough group for them. But I think if they can get out of that group, that's a big statement of intent for them. And, you know, best of luck to them with that. But it'll be really interesting to see, you know, especially that game against Chelsea, how that boils down. A lot of, obviously, a bit of, I think there's a growing hatred between those two clubs now, which is interesting, despite the fact so many players are starting to move between them. But we are going to move on then from La Liga. So that's going to wrap up our discussion there. Interesting things, how things are starting to lay out in La Liga. We'll see probably when we review this next time round, have Real Madrid been able to pick it up, or is this looking like Zinedine Zidane might be facing the chop? We don't know, but let's go move on then to the Bundesliga, where again we look at the league table, and again the probably what we would say the biggest fish in the pond, they're not up where they want to be. And by Bayern Munich standards, I think it's safe to say Bayern Munich standards is they expect to win the league every single season at the moment. Obviously, after the season, the transitional play they've had of their desire to build a Bayern brand of football in which they press, but they also dominate the game in possession. Well, at the moment, it's not really working out for them under Carlo Ancelotti. They're currently sitting in third place, having played six, with four wins, one draw, and one loss, which isn't bad, it has to be pointed out. That is not bad at all. But when you look at their rivals and who's sitting around them, up at top, Borussia Dortmund, led by the former Ajax manager, Peter Bosz, who has them at five wins and one draw, whilst below them sit Hoffenheim on four wins and two draws. So very impressive to see from Hoffenheim, despite the fact people thought they might be a one-season wonder, and even more worryingly for Carlo, Julian Nagelsmann, who is constantly pestered about the Bayern Munich job, has actually started to say recently that he would consider it. So perhaps Bayern might be doing what they do, which is they line up long-term deals. Bayern's situation, though, guys, it hasn't been helped by Robert Lewandowski. Now, Lewandowski came out at the very end of the transfer window, into the start of it, saying, you know, he was frustrated at the club. He felt that they'd let him down again. He blames, obviously, his teammates, the fact that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang won the Golden Boot, or the gold, I think it's like the Golden Cannon or something in Germany. It's a bit of a weird equivalent of it. Whilst he was left short, he said that Dortmund's team were behind Aubameyang. His team weren't behind him. He felt isolated, and he was annoyed at the spending. Obviously, this season, Bayern had broke the Bundesliga's transfer record of £42 million to sign Quentin Tolisso. Now, that is incredible. I'm just gobsmacked at this. When you look at the other leagues, you have Premier League, highest spend, highest buy is £90 million for, pretty much £90 million for, I think it's Lukaku or Pogba. It flux between two as to see figures, but roughly around £90 million ballpark. You got Ligue 1, which is now astronomical, of nearly £200 million we're looking like for Neymar.
Yeah, let's write that one off.
Yeah, same thing. I think we then have to look then flip side of it in La Liga, obviously, because of 115 for to get Dembele away. And if you then look then at Serie A, it's only £79 million for, only £79 million for Gonzalo Higuain. Bundesliga's top transfer being half of that either points to how canny the Bundesliga clubs are, that they are able to sort of pick a player out at such a good price. Or is Lewandowski right that perhaps they just don't want to spend that much money?
A little from column A, a little from column B. It's more the fact that really the only team that make massive, massive buys are that one by Munich. Dortmund can make a you know, nice transfer if they want, but they're not going to. They're not a financial powerhouse per se, even though they can spend £10 million on a guy who played no first team football. In what was his name? Jordan Sancho.
Oh, yeah, the controversial signing of Sancho from City.
Mm-hmm. So there is only one team in that league that really has the financial superpower. Again, partly because of the whole rules of ownership there. You're not going to get one person pumping loads of money into the club in the same way as you will or an entire country buying a club, as in the case of PSG and Manchester City. So that's not necessarily surprising on that front, that the transfer record is much lower. Having said that, I'm more surprised at who it's on than the number that it's at. Having said that, if really four wins, a draw and a defeat is a bad start to a season for Bayern Munich, then, you know, swap places with me, please, as an Arsenal fan. The defeat was to Hoffenheim.
Yeah,
if you bear that in mind,
true.
The defeat was to Hoffenheim, and the draw, okay, was against Wolfsburg. That's not good enough. That isn't good enough from Bayern Munich's perspective. But again, early in the season, you are losing to a team that is going to be up there, given how well they've played and how well they did last year as well, come the end of the season. That's not as surprising, and that's not really as problematic as it could be. They're not losing to, you know, Cologne. Nobody's losing to Cologne right now. Barely anybody's even drawing with Cologne right now. It's not a team that really wouldn't expect to be up there. They are beating the teams that you expect to be, and okay, the performances aren't good enough in a couple of other games, but that's fine for now.
You've also got, I think, the key thing with Bayern you've got to look into, of course, you mentioned the Lewandowski. He's very unsettled. That situation, that's kind of been very well established. But you've also got the lesser spoken about Manuel Neuer. Obviously, he's now out until January. Yeah. He's injured. And then you've got the situation at the back. I mean, Boateng's
injured
performance,
as always.
He's injured as always. And the games that he has played this season, his performances have come under a lot of scrutiny. You've also got Joshua Kimmich, who's a very bright young fullback for Bayern. But he's trying to fill the shoes of Philipp Lahm. Yeah. That's not an easy task at all. So, you know, they've got, you know, Javi Martinez as well, reading some of the reviews there. His performance and passing stats haven't been what you'd expect of a ball-playing CDM from Barcelona. So, you know, it's a very unsettled squad situation, I think, at Bayern, which, you know, I think partially is to blame for the start.
Looking at that team that as we say, you know, there are a couple of injuries. It's not necessarily the squad harmony isn't there. You know, your team chemistry isn't 100. You're not going to win. But that team that went out against Wolfsburg at home, really, aside from the goalkeeper and possibly Rudy in that central defensive midfield position, is by far and away the strongest one out there. Whereas, you know, their opposition's biggest threat came from the fact that Divock Origi played up front for them. you know, it's a bizarre position to see Bayern Munich in, not happy after six games despite only dropping points in two of them. But you can kind of understand a little bit of where that's coming from, and also the fact that it's off the pitch issues. It's this Lewandowski thing. It's the fact that they haven't got their first choice goalkeeper, and that they are. You will naturally. It is a cycle. Sport is a cycle. You will start to look at the dominance of Bayern Munich in previous years and go, well, are they going to be able to keep it up? Not forever.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, the whole issue which they wanted to introduce the Bayern brand of football probably talks about quite a bit. And whether, I mean, when I was listening to reports on it, they said that it really started with Louis van Gaal getting him in to implement Dutch sort of idea of retention of possession, moving then on to Jupp Heynckes saying retention but attack, and then Guardiola, whatever Guardiola was probably doing at that point, which
attack,
was sort
attack,
of
attack.
Attack but throw it the ball around and with crazy formations. It'll be interesting to see if maybe Nagelsmann is the final piece in that jigsaw. But looking at the other teams obviously around them, not taking any credit away from them, I think it should be said, Dortmund obviously out in front, Hoffenheim in second, Hannover back in the Bundesliga, and they're up in fourth. Incredible work from them. Augsburg obviously doing quite well, and then Leverkusen down in six. I'm sure many Bundesliga fans will be cheering the fact that they aren't in the top four anymore, which obviously, sorry Leipzig fans, it's just the fact that so many don't seem to like your club, even though it's actually an interesting way that it's run, but we'll move on to that. Moving further down the leagues, when we look at it, we've got Leverkusen in 10th. Leverkusen fans will be hoping that they don't repeat last season's Horlicks of a season where they had a really bad run at one point, let go of their coach Schmidt, and then ended up sort of just in the mid-table. They're obviously a European regular. When we look around then, guys, just sort of as a kind of quick thing before we then move on to Ligue 1 very, very quickly. Of those teams that sort of maybe surprise you as to where they are they too high up, are they too far down, which, you know, do we think that there are any which potentially when we look at it maybe last season might have been a one season wonder in terms of a good way or a bad way?
I think vice versa. I think more the case that the start to this season has been unrealistic and where they are. It seems weird seeing a team with three wins and three draws in the top four. But you look at who they've been against. They beat Mainz. They're the only team in the league so far to have not beaten Cologne. They drew with Cologne. They've drawn against Freiburg, who are down in 16th. They've drawn against Wolfsburg, like Bayern did, who are down in 13th. And they've drawn against Cologne, who are bottom of the table. Those are the three teams that they've played and they haven't picked up full points against, and they're still in the top four. They're going to struggle when they actually play teams that, you know, are decent.
Yeah, I think just looking at that top sort of six or seven, I think one team to watch out for in particular is RB Leipzig. Of course, they're in the Champions League, doing, you know, moderately well at the moment, but they've got Timo Werner up front, 21 years of age. I think the stats, 26 goals in 37 appearances for Leipzig. I mean, that's absolutely formidable for someone of his age. And that can, of course, only get better as well. One of the goals he scored the other week against, I think it was Frankfurt, he picked up the ball, I think it was midway through his own half on the counter-attack, just after Leipzig cleared a corner in the 90th minute, beats three defenders on his way to just completely, you know, just leaving them all for dead, and then finishing the ball off. Incredible stuff, incredible pace. I think that's probably his biggest asset. So he'll definitely be one to watch against the very in a very well organised and of course a team with massive amounts of money behind them. The RB brand, of course, you've got Salzburg, you've got the New York team as well. So, you know, big brand also, in football.
Sorry, Joe, I think they've also, I believe I saw the other day, they've also set one up in Ghana now as well. So they're branching out so much.
A growing brand, certainly. And then you look at the other teams, and of course we've mentioned Munich not firing on all cylinders at all. Hoffenheim, again, a massive, massive surprise, really. But now a team that have kind of become an institution in that top five or six in the Bundesliga. I mean, I remember, I think it was three or four seasons ago, their first season in the Bundesliga, when they led it for, I think it was it was until February or March, and
it was
Leicester-esque, doing so well. But they've managed to kind of retain those heights of league positions in the Bundesliga, which is really good to see. And of course, Dortmund on top, their last couple of games, 6-1 against Mönchengladbach, and then 5-0.
The goal they've conceded all season as well. That is, they're just scary.
Which is phenomenal for a Dortmund team we associate with all out attack and sort of hang defending. It's
incredible. With a Dortmund team who managed to concede twice against Spurs by leaving the near post completely unmarked.
I mean,
Peter
Bosz. That
seems like a flaw.
It has to be noticed, Peter Bosz. I mean, there was criticism of him, obviously, of how he handled the Europa League final against Jose Mourinho. People said he was naive. He might have matured a bit now Dortmund, so that's interesting to see. And you never know, actually. It could be. It is good to see that there is a bit more competition back in the Bundesliga, finally. Just before we move on then, very quickly as well, Joe, like other players just for Leipzig, I think we also need to keep an eye out for Emil Forsberg, of course. Lethal assist player. I'm very impressed and also surprised that Leipzig, they were keen negotiators also, and they were able to hold on to pretty much all their players. The only one they let go was letting him go in advance of a season was Nabil Keita to Liverpool, who I can't wait to see if he continues the form he's in at the moment. A fantastic destroyer in the midfield, but also a great transitional player. So they've got a real core of talent in that team, and going to be interesting.
Not missing Oliver Burke too much with his move to West Brom.
Via Leipzig. Yeah. That is.
But of course, that's another talking point about the Bundesliga. You talk about the Jadon Sancho situation, and the fact that, you know, it's becoming more and more of a trend for young British players to seek first team football in overseas.
Do two people count as a trend?
It's better than none.
It's increased. I can't bring, you know, the increase, but it's been, you know, more of a number of. There was three or four, you know, five or six on deadline day, which, you know, I think is very, very good, because it's been very, very well established now. But these youngsters aren't going to get played regularly in the Premier League for the sides, often, especially if it's a Manchester United or a Chelsea. Yeah. Rashford, of course, being the anomaly with that. But
Tammy Abraham, of course.
Yeah, Tammy Abraham. But, you know, he's, you know, to break into that Chelsea first team, he's got, you know, next to no chance, I would say. But it's definitely a good thing. And, of course, they're probably going to be getting a better footballing education as well, which will only enhance their development if they move to very much these development-focused and orientated clubs like Leipzig, with Oliver Burke, as you saw last season. And he's come back and, you know, I think is playing better, although we haven't really seen much of him yet for West Brom. But, yeah, it's a good and a growing trend, which is good to see.
Yeah, and I agree, and long may it continue. It has been always an issue. People have said that English players, they don't tend to go abroad, they don't seem to like it. I think if it's starting to pick up and people are starting to wise up, that perhaps their career might be best suited with a short move overseas, gain a reputation, gain some experience, learn how to better manage yourself, and then come back to the English league and make a name for yourself. That, I think, could be a good way for, hopefully, English football to develop. I mean, of course, we will also on URM be talking potentially about last summer gone and about how the under-20s did, so you can stay tuned for that. Listen in on that on URM1350.net. But we're going to move on then to the final big league we're going to be running through, and we're going to probably have to do this one a bit of speed here, boys, looking at how much time we've got left. So it's obviously going to be Ligue 1. And obviously, we know that there is one big fish in there that we could always mention, but we're saving discussing what happened with Neymar for another time. We're going to look then at how the league sits. PSG, shock horror, they're out in front, and it wasn't just Neymar, of course, they snapped up. It was Kylian Mbappe from arch rivals Monaco, who have actually surprised a lot of people, despite the fact they had much their best talent pilfered away and they were able to resist some of their better talents, such as Thomas Lamar being taken by Liverpool or Arsenal in the final hours of deadline day. They were able to resist that. Interesting to see then that they are still up there. They're in second. They're only 1 point behind PSG, who are on 19 points. Monaco then on 18. Then we go down to Bordeaux, a bit more of a surprise, but they do have the young Brazilian winger Malcolm, who has started to make a name for himself in European
football.
Young
Brazilian winger Malcolm?
Yeah.
What a name.
It's pretty cool, actually, to be fair. Like, he's a pretty nifty, skillful player. Looking then down, just very quickly as we glance through, before we then probably run through a bit more detail of some of these for a general summary, Marseille sitting in fifth. Not quite the resurgence they might have been hoping for, but I suppose they'll say they're on the right track. Lyon, surprise for a few people who put them as dark horses to maybe get that second spot if Monaco faltered. They're down seventh. Nice as well, looking like that last season's spectacular run into third might have been a bit of a blip. Perhaps European football is really starting to have a drain on them, obviously beaten by Napoli earlier on. And then right the way down the team, which I'm just going to very quickly point out before we then go right the way back to the top, is Lille. Obviously a very team famous. They've got quite a few titles as well from it, and they do like to produce their bits of young talent. Eden Hazard obviously came through there, as did his brother, and I believe Romelu Lukaku.
His other brother,
yeah, he's got, I forgot he had another one. And obviously Romelu Lukaku did a very brief stint there out on loan. But they are currently managed by Marco Baresi, a madman who Pep Guardiola is fascinated with, sort of emulating his style. I think it's a 3-3-3-1 with sort of random different positions that look like only something you'd play in a FIFA career mode. And I think he might be getting a little bit mad at this point. But that's Lyon. They're down in Lille. They're down 18th. They might be able to pull it around. But let's flick back up to the top then. PSG started off, obviously, they're in good form. They're competing. Monaco are keeping track with them. Do we think that that is then really all praise should go to Monaco for the fact that everyone thought, oh, well, here we go, PSG are going to now walk the league?
Absolutely. I think, you know, like you mentioned, Mbappe, that signing along with Neymar, and then, of course, Cavani's been, you know, at the heart of that attack for a very long time as well. I think, you know, that attack, judging by the fact that they've scored more goals marginally as well as Monaco, both on 21 this season, one goal more than Barcelona in as many games played, it's a very, very mean feat, I think, in that respect. And it's a tribute to the likes of Falcao, who I think now is getting back to his best after a very weird season a couple of years ago at Manchester United, where he's very off colour.
I think from another stat I saw, I think him and Paulo Dybala are the top two scorers in Europe at the moment, which is incredible.
Absolutely phenomenal stuff. And then you've got the Polish international Gilic as well, and also João Moutinho, a Portuguese I'd pick out as well, as very underrated players for Monaco as well. Kind of, you know, shield the back four very well, and also are able to spread it out wide and create opportunities, which is good to see.
Fabinho as well, still there.
Yeah,
a player
exactly.
I love.
Exactly. You know, so despite the loss of Mbappe, an 18-year-old wonder kid who is getting numerous comparisons to Henri, I think he's, you know, it's not a bad situation for Monaco, and they're still proving that, you know, this year in the Champions League and this year in Ligue 1, they can really progress and build on what was a great league victory for them last year against the odds.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's surprised to see, obviously, that top two. Seeing Lyon down a little bit further, you know, three wins, three draws and defeat out of seven games, conceded 10 already. Like, they're surprisingly not doing too well. I know the average, what is it, being in the Europa League takes off two or three places off your league position or something like that. But even then, that would still just about sit them outside that top three. Maybe that's, again, like we've said with other teams, not too much to worry about at this stage of the season. Certainly, Lille have got some big questions to ask. One win so far this season. But then they've only conceded a goal more than Lyon up in seventh. So it's hardly as if, things are going too badly for all of those clubs. Obviously, as we've been saying throughout the show, there's a long time to go. It wouldn't surprise me if Lyon end up coming in that third position. Again, remembering that this is another one of those leagues with only three Champions League spots and not four. But to see PSG top, you know, three goals conceded in total. No defeats yet, only the one draw. It's going to take something special, given that Monaco decided to sell pretty much everything but the kitchen sink and Thomas Lamar. And then PSG was able to buy it for an amount of money that would make Scrooge McDuck weep. It'll be interesting, this one. I think, aside from the top two, pretty much nothing else is predictable in that league.
It will. I do agree with you on that, Dave. I think probably the top two, where they finish, it very well could be the position it is with PSG finishing on top and Monaco second. But I think if Monaco are able to leapfrog it, and if PSG's team manages to stay, say, injury-free for most of it, and say when it comes to those big clashes between Monaco and PSG, and Monaco are able to potentially even win, I think if Monaco win a second league earn, given the strength of PSG, I think Monaco are going to be extremely hard-pressed to keep Leonardo Jardim at the club, because that man has started to really court the interest of a lot of clubs. I know Arsenal at one point were very, well, we were reportedly interested in, but Thomas Tuchel was also in there, so it's a bit confusing as to what situation was there. But Barcelona also were tipped with him. Several clubs are, so it'll be interesting.
Anyone would take him, wouldn't they?
He's a fantastic manager.
He's proven that he can do it with the money, and he's proven that he can do it even when he's sold,
and with the youth
95%
as well.
Of the players, yeah. So that's a very impressive start from him.
So he very well probably will be our manager to watch, I think, this season, given what's going on.
Definitely. Mm.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap up then our quick chat on the leagues. Very, very quickly then, guys. We do, obviously, our honourable mentions. We're going to do this very shortly. Is there any team particularly like you've been keeping an eye on, seeing how they might be doing? You know, we've only got a couple of minutes left. So, David?
Yeah, I'm going to give a quick shout out to Arsenal's Europa League opponents in the doubleheader match week 3-4. Crvena Zvezda, Red Star Belgrade, team that I was fortunate enough to see on said year abroad. Fantastic atmosphere in that match against Partizan. That's the only league game in 10 they've played this season that they've failed to win. 28 points off of 10 games, a phenomenal stat. And since 20th of July, which is when the Europa League qualification campaign started, they've drawn 2, lost 1, and won something like 13. They're on an unbelievable run of form right now. And again, it helps from being in a league that's probably even weaker than Scotland's, if that's possible. But, yeah, fantastic start from them. And certainly a team that Arsenal can't treat as a walkover. I mean, look what happened when all those Cologne fans came to the Emirates, and now they're going to go to the 55,000-seater Macarena, as it's called, in Belgrade. I would suggest that they are certainly a team to watch, even if the league and potentially the country. Then again, having said that, Serbia, in terms of their qualifying campaign, they're top of a group that contains Ireland, Wales and Austria. So, interesting time right now for Serbian football with Mitrovic and Matic and all those, Ivanovic and all those others ending in
all those itches.
All those itches, yeah. Speaking of, now.
I was going to pick out FC Schalke in the Bundesliga. recently lost, of course, as we've mentioned, to Bayern Munich and RB Leipzig against some... they haven't had, I think it's fair to say, the easiest of starts to the Bundesliga. And they've got Dortmund coming up in a couple of weeks' time. The Rhineland derby, so I think they'll be needing a bit of a kick up the what's it to to try and you know, gain some footing in the Bundesliga, because you know at the moment they're in seventh and should be, by their standards, I think, far up. You know, they're a small village, Gelsenkirchen in Germany, very similar to Hoffenheim in that respect, in a geographical sense, and there's no reason, as they have done in previous years, like with players like Raul and other players that they've been able to attract, Huntelaar, that they can kind of get back to those heights and, you know, be the underdogs once more in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, well, hopefully we actually will be keeping updates on how those teams are getting on. I think we might have a little bit more probably to chat about a few of them, I'm sure, in a couple of weeks' time. But we have, unfortunately, now run out of time here on this very first Bail Me Out, our first one back after summer. Do stay tuned. We've got a couple of specials coming up where we're talking, like I said, all things transfers, Champions League, etc., etc. All for you to look forward to. But for now, that's going to be... I'm going to say thanks very much to David and Joe for joining me in the studio as we've gone through everything here. And thank you all very much for listening.